But first, visionary computer scientist Jaron Lanier. He's best known for his research on virtual reality. He has a new book out called Who Owns the Future? And Strange Champs talks with Jaron Lanier.
Well, Jaron, in your book, you argue that the rise of digital networks, you know, like Facebook and Google, has led our economy into recession and decimated the middle class, which most of us who use Facebook and Google probably think, how can that be? What kind of financial implications could using Facebook have?
Yes. Well, here's the issue. The issue is that we've adopted a business model for using information technology where by far the best way to make money is to have the biggest computer on the network in some remote server farm that builds behavioral models of other people and then uses those behavioral models to subtly manipulate those people. And the problem with that business model is that it works so well that it concentrates wealth and power in an incredibly exclusive club of the people who own the biggest computers.
Wow, you're describing 1984.
Well, you know, it's not exactly 1984 because 1984 was all gray and drab. And in truth, most of the people who own the biggest computers are kind of young and hip and cool and nice. And they really are. I mean, we have the sweetest elite in history, probably, but it doesn't matter. The point is that we're concentrating wealth and power so intensely that it's undoing our security and our futures. And I have to point out that the architecture has had its worst effects so far, not in things like social media and search and whatnot, but in finance. But the thing is, if you look at the big hedge funds and high-frequency trading firms and all these concerns, it's the same type of computer, the same algorithms, the same architectures, the same kinds of people, the same kinds of strategy. You know, if you just change the labels, we're looking at the same thing. It's just a way of using information to concentrate power. And so the way it happens is that initially you get some incredibly sweet candy that incites you to enter into the system and give over information to other people. And in finance, it might be a too-good-to-believe mortgage or something like that, or recently maybe bitcoins. But anyway, whatever it is, it's some kind of candy. And then in the case of consumer internet stuff, it's like free services, free social networking or whatever. And then what happens is you start giving over your information to these parties who use it to calculate wealth out of the world. And they are so good at it that they actually undermine the world in which their wealth even makes sense. And that's called too big to fail.
Play this out in more consumer-oriented terms. For instance, you point out this sort of astonishing discrepancy when we used to have big companies like Kodak versus little tiny companies that may be worth more but are, you know, have tiny numbers of employees.
Right. So what's happened now is that we've taken what used to be really huge industries in terms of middle-class jobs like music and photography and this thing you might have heard of called journalism. And
never heard of that.
And what's happened is we've replaced an old system in which there were many hundreds of thousands of solid middle-class jobs with security and the potential for retirement and a safety cushion and all of those good things. And we've replaced them with a system in which there's early treats. There's a really easier on-ramp in this illusion of sort of equity and access for everybody. Well, it's more than illusion. The early treats can sometimes be very real. But the problem with it is that there's only a token number of success stories, a tiny token number of people who have successful YouTube videos or something like that. And everyone else lives on hope. It's a revival of the old Horatio Alger stories from the 19th century. And this economy of most people sort of scrambling for hope with a tiny number of token winners of sort of princes or the very special unusual people instead of a real middle class is no way to run a civilization. You know, you can't have a democracy that way. A democracy totally relies on people broadly being able to outspend the tip of elites, you know, and we lose that in that world. And it's only starting. I mean, the really big thing happens when the cars are driving themselves and robots are operating the factories or objects are being printed out for us by 3D printers. As the century progresses in a couple decades from now, perhaps, we're going to start to lose a lot of middle-class jobs. And the thing about that is that all that stuff still runs on information. Somebody's going to design the objects that are printed out by 3D printers. But if we keep on doing things the way we are, all the money's going to accrue to whatever big computer is routing the information and only tiny token number of people will actually benefit from the system themselves and everyone else will live on hope. And that leads us to nowhere. It leads us to a failed economy.
Mm. It sounds like the underlying issue is that we've created a world in which humans seem to be becoming less and less useful. machines are increasingly better at creating value than people are. And yet, what you're pointing out is that that's an illusion. Of course they're not. We've just created this kind of giant shell game in which we're not valuing the human part of the input.
Exactly. That's precisely what's going on. We're creating a theatrical illusion in which we're pretending that value isn't coming from people in order to support the fantasy of artificial intelligence on a network doing work, which is not real at all. But what it does do is it concentrates huge fortunes with the people who own this illusion.
Right. Well, you've proposed that we, as part of beginning to craft a solution, something you call a humanistic information economy. What is that?
Well, this goes back to the very origin of the whole idea of connecting people on a digital network. What's interesting is that the very first generation of ideas were exactly what I'm proposing. So I'm not really proposing something radically new, but in a way going back to where we started. So back in 1960, the first ideas about how to connect people on digital networks were articulated, and the fellow who did it was named Ted Nelson. He's actually still with us, and he's still named Ted Nelson. And Ted's idea is simple. His parents were Hollywood parents, and he'd seen directly how the labor movement had created a possibility for actors and musicians in Hollywood to find some sense of security, even in a business that was very kind of chancy and where you lived gig to gig. And he realized that someday, as automation got really good and machines got better and better, we'd move into an information economy, and everybody would be living a life that's kind of like what a Hollywood actor or musician was living, and everybody would need the same kinds of benefits. Everybody who's a truck driver now, or a miner, or a teacher, or a doctor, or a nurse, or anybody at all was going to be in the same boat. And he saw that there was a kind of simple solution, actually. And the solution is to always keep track of where information comes from on a network. And if you have a link back to whoever was the source of information that's useful later, you can send them a micropayment. And if you have a universal micropayment system in a richly, densely connected network, you would naturally create a middle class out of an information economy that would be persistent. And then you could afford to have a democracy because the middle class could always outspend the elite and so forth. So it would create a solution that would finally get us beyond the fear of automation killing jobs.
Well, wait, does this mean that to open a link a friend puts on Facebook, I'd have to pay her?
Well, right. And the key thing to remember is that you're also getting paid. I mean, the whole thing about capitalism is that you have to kind of go on faith that even though you have to pay for stuff, you're also getting paid for your stuff. And by having economic activity, the overall value of the society is going up. So on average, people are doing better than they otherwise would.
So the goal would be to post more stuff than you read.
No, not exactly. Here's the way I see it working out. The way the world is currently working now is all of us are being scrutinized constantly by algorithms and remote big computers. They're behavioral models of all of us, and third parties are paying to use those models to manipulate us. They manipulate what links you see on Google and who you're introduced to on Facebook and all kinds of stuff like that. And the idea is to sort of gradually create this perfect investment where you can just pay to manipulate the world to your benefit. Now, the thing is that all of that value that we're providing is very real. So if we just kept track of whenever there are bits that exist because of you, even if you didn't intend to create them, and that would create a micropayment, you'd constantly be earning little dribs and drabs of money. It's not necessarily a conscious thing.
Whoa, do you mean that if I'm like browsing the new books at Amazon, and of course Amazon keeps track of what books I look at, later I'm going to get a little check in the mail from Amazon?
If and only if that data contributes to Amazon being able to increase its profits by using that data in some way. Yeah, absolutely. And I know this might sound like sort of an alien or weird scheme to people, but the thing you have to understand is that the complexity of it is actually less than what we're doing now. People don't understand how insane what we're doing now is. And the notion that keeping track of where value comes from will actually lead to betterment for people is just the same old weird trick of capitalism, which does actually work. So it's just a combination of using network design and capitalism together more efficiently than what we're currently doing. And I know it sounds sort of alien and weird, but it actually does make sense. You know, in a funny way, it's exactly what's implemented within the confines of somebody's private networking space. Like when you go on Facebook, you can keep track of who's linked to you. It's a full network. If Facebook was monetized, it would actually generate a ton of money. And that would actually be good for people and good for Facebook. It would actually make Facebook a richer company.
So play this out a bit because I want to make sure I understand it. How would this work in practice if I'm going online and I'm using, I don't know, Pinterest or Facebook, or I'm ordering some music on iTunes. What would change?
Well, what would change is if you're on Pinterest, first of all, if you get a lot of attention in Pinterest, you get direct money from that. But more importantly, if some fund somewhere is analyzing what you do on Pinterest and they realize that they should change their investment in real estate in your neighborhood based on behavioral models of people in your neighborhood, based on how people in your neighborhood are looking at your Pinterest information, the way this happens is all very indirect and very weird and algorithmic and doesn't necessarily even make sense to the human mind. But whatever it is, there'd be links back to where the information came from. And if the result of an algorithm created a profit, there would be a backscattering of micropayments to all the sources of the information.
Can you really see this happening without revolution in the streets or laws imposed? I mean, corporations are not, you know, just going to be really happy to start handing back micropayments to millions of people.
Well, I put the question exactly in reverse. I see this as a way of avoiding revolution in the streets, because what I'm worried about is money and power being so concentrated, not immediately, but maybe in like 20 or 30 years, if this pattern persists, that there'll be massive unemployment and massive concentrations of wealth. And then there will be a revolution of just the kind that is extremely unpleasant. And I very much want to avoid that. I actually think what I'm saying is good for ordinary people, but it's also good for corporations. I mean, the thing about corporations and finance schemes and any activity in capitalism is that it's only valuable to the degree in overall society is wealthy and an economy is growing, in fact, and they all feed off of general well-being. And if we're undoing that, we're actually undercutting these very institutions that are propagating it. And I think ultimately they'll see that it's in their own self-interest.
Jaron Lanier is the author of Who Owns the Future? He spoke with Anne Strainchamps. So what do you think of Lanier's argument? You can let us know by sending us a message through Facebook or Twitter, or through our website at ttbook.org, where you will find links to our Facebook and Twitter accounts.